Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And this is kind of an epic episode.
This one is fun.
Episode 15.
Yeah.
For as boring as episode 14 was, we really made up for it in this episode.
I completely agree. We were all over the map, literally.
Literally, geographically, all over the map.
Altitudes were ascended.
Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So we are talking about episode 15. There are 17 episodes this season. On any normal season, we'd be done. The finale would have happened last episode. But here
but
we are.
No.
In Alaska. At the center of, I don't know where I was going with that.
I don't think it's in the center of anything.
It's objectively not central to anything. But Bits, did we have any leftovers from last time?
We did, Nancy. We wanted to understand the etymology of landlord.
Oh, you said it was a derivative of lover.
Yeah,
which I
it
don't
is not.
Think is right. Okay, good.
No, it is not. So
tell me.
I can walk you through that. So
please.
Lubber. The word lubber, this originated in the mid-14th century. It was used to describe someone who was clumsy, stupid, or lazy. It's presumed to have come from the Scandinavian word lobra, which means plump, lazy fellow. Alternatively, it could have come from the old French word lobeur, which means swindler or parasite.
Yeesh.
So the word landlubber is actually a compound noun. Is a combination of the words land and lubber, classic, and was first used around 1700, and that was described to use to describe landsmen, usually who were unemployed. So I guess it was sort of like, man, not only are you on land, you can't even get a job on land. Meanwhile, we're out here on the boat with a job.
I'm upset. I'm so happy we looked this up. That is really interesting. Etymology is always interesting. You heard it here on the pod.
It's so good. Shout out to the History of English podcast. If you've never heard of this podcast, I think it's the best podcast in the world. It's extremely. It's a guy that literally just tracks truly the history of English and how it evolved from the derivations of all of the roots and the sort of like tree of languages to arrive at sort of today's English. So it goes into tangents about these different languages. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Whoa, color me excited.
Yeah.
I just downloaded episode one. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. My dad would love that. I need to send it to him.
Yeah,
does he ever settle the debate of if it's culinary or culinary?
He does not. He does not.
We'll never know.
We'll have to write in.
We'll never know.
Speaking of writing in, let's get into – I'm not speaking of writing in.
Yeah, do we have any potlucks?
Let's get into this episode,
though. I don't think we got a potluck. Yeah, let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, I'm going to kick it off with my amuse bouche reaction.
Please,
to this episode.
Give it to me.
Cool. It was cool. It was fun. It was like, again, we sort of like the people we met from Alaska. We actually met people from Alaska this episode.
Finally. But hold up. Were they from Alaska or were they just training in Alaska?
I'm not sure. That's actually a great question, because you had sort of like the everyday man, and then we like were. Ended the episode in the governor's mansion.
It was, so he's from Alaska.
Really crazy. But no, this episode was fun. It was like fun to see the chefs having fun. There's a lot to talk about. I'm going to leave it there because there's a lot of talking points in terms of me breaking down what I mean by fun. But where's your head at?
I too loved this episode. I thought it was exciting. It was kind of like the most jam-packed day of all time.
Yeah, it was a long day.
Long day. And I think that we should just get into it because it started with what was at the time like sort of an iconic reality TV
Tyra Mail
trope. Tyra Mail! I have it in my notes too.
Yes.
We got some Tyra Mail.
Can we talk about there was like a millisecond of time where I was like, are we – I heard Eagle's Nest.
That's what I thought too. What did they say?
Eagle Crest.
Oh,
and I was
like,
are we
Eagle's
going
Nest.
To Hitler's vacation home?
I also thought they said Eagle's Nest, but I wasn't going to bring it up on the pod because Nazis have kind of been in the ether lately.
That's
anti-shoutouts to Kanye West.
Dude, anti-shoutout. I mean, he just needs to be institutionalized. But okay, so we are not in Eagle's Nest. So we are in fact still in Alaska. I was like, did we name it that? Okay. Eagle's Crest, very different. So can you imagine if like Top Chef just like Top Chef Germany goes to
wandered into like white supremacist territory?
Seems like maybe kind of easy in Alaska. Okay.
Well, it's definitely easy in Seattle and Portland. That's like
for sure
where the Klan is these days.
So
let's get it off this topic.
On to other traumas. Brooke is basically arrives on the scene, sees a helicopter, and was like, fuck that. Let's pause on this because,
yes,
you know, sometimes I think she is genuinely, she looks terrified to me. She's crying. Yeah. She's like not having a good time. I don't think it's very performative. No. I have to imagine that you give this show the okay. I have to imagine that you have to communicate your limits to the producers. Like, I can't imagine that you get to be surprised to go on a helicopter, but maybe they just at that, maybe that didn't strike anybody as a difficult ask. I don't know.
That's a good question. I wonder if there's someone at the show we could reach out to ask about this, like anyone on the production team. Because you definitely sign a ton of legal waivers when you go on TV, especially if it's like reality and competition TV. And I'm sure one of the waivers that you sign is around like extreme sports and activities.
Yeah, there's like line item like 13.A1.
But I'm sure it's the same thing where you're like,
helicopter.
Okay, that's probably just a CYA here. Yeah. Like, I'm sure that you never think like, oh, I'm going to get in a helicopter on a cooking show.
Yeah.
Like, if this were Survivor, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think that they have, like, access to contemporary technology in Survivor. That's the whole point. Anyway, it was really interesting. So this is a moment that Brooke talked about in our interview with us,
mm-hmm.
which is very meaningful to her and I think has really stuck with her probably because it was traumatizing.
Yeah.
But she talks about how like this is truly her number one fear. We already got a sense. Here are the things we've learned that she's afraid of this season. Heights, which was the space needle. And then we have boats, which she like was really not interested in being on a cruise ship. Yep. And now we have helicopters. This one seemed the most intense of all of them. There's been a lot of alternative forms of transportation in this season.
Yeah. You got to cover a lot of ground quickly, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of highways there.
Yeah. But all to say, like, this was like a phobia. This was an irrational fear that she was, like, actively dealing with on camera. And she talks about in her interview with us how this was like a really pivotal moment for her about like fear and what fear can be both a productive emotion and a counterproductive emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for her, she was, you know, she's saying, I have a young son and I want to show him that like you cannot let anything get in the way of achieving the things you want. Yeah. And if that means like getting in a fucking helicopter and landing on a glacier, then like I'm just gonna have to tough it out. And it's not like she toughed it out and was strong about it. Like she was crying. She was holding on to Josh for dear life.
Yeah.
It was not pretty, but I do think that it was quite inspiring to just see her like power through that and then do really well.
Yeah. And it was fun that she did eventually open her eyes and was distracted by the general splendor, to use a quote by Elizabeth Bennet. I was admiring the general splendor.
Should we do a Pride and Prejudice watch pod?
Oh my God. We could watch literally every version of Pride and Prejudice.
Does that include Bride and Prejudice, the Bollywood version?
And Pride and Prejudice and Zombies? I think we'd have to. Yeah.
Okay, cool. You'll find us in retirement doing that pod. Cool. Okay, so let's get to the challenge. The helicopter lands on a glacier, and they are greeted by a dog sled.
This
Our
was very cool.
Our second epic form of transportation.
I know.
In this episode.
Yeah. I knew. So I see this dog sled. So I'm sitting there. I see this dog sled.
Sitting there.
I know dog sledding is a thing. I know it's real. But then I hadn't really seen – it's sort of – you know that, like, phenomena of you're exposed to something as a kid and you think it's going to be a much bigger – play yes. a much bigger part in your life as an adult? Like the Bermuda Triangle. Like, just yes. stuff like that that you hadn't – that had an outsized impact in your life in childhood. And for whatever reason, dog sledding was that for me too. I just feel like dog sledding came up a lot. And I really hadn't been exposed to dog sledding until this episode in a long time. And I just had the thought of, wow, I can't believe this is really a thing.
Well, not to brag, but this is actually the second time this week that dog sledding has come up in my Bravo content. Because
where are people dog sledding?
I am ashamed to say that I have given into my addiction and I have begun The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I am on season 2. I will say that Bits, you don't need to watch – like, you just need to watch season 2. Like, throw away season 1.
Okay.
I mean, it's good. But season 2 of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is honestly crazier than people told me it was. Like, it is outrageous.
Okay. Well, and I know the grandpa's, like, engaged to the granddaughter or something. Married
that
to them.
Is fucking table stakes compared to season 2. I don't even want to spoil it. The things that happen in this show are wild. But they just went dog sledding in Vail in the episode I watched this week.
Wow. I didn't know there was dog sledding in Vail. Yeah. I really didn't think there was dog sledding that far south.
I feel like Bravo and the Iditarod are the two greatest consumers of dog sledding.
Yeah. That's a heavy fan overlap, I'm sure.
It is always crazy to me when there are overlaps between Top Chef and other Bravo shows, because it's like Top Chef is the water outlier canister. In all of the entire Bravo catalog. And like the water sommelier from last season. Anyway, I digress.
I love that.
I love Bravo.
Iditarod. Okay. Let's get into the food. So we're at the dog camp. We have taken the dog sled. We have arrived at base camp.
Training camp for the dogs participating in the Iditarod.
Love it. And the quick fire this episode is that and Tom and Padma are waiting for us, by the way.
Padma is in quite the coat. Feels a bit culturally appropriative, but that wasn't the time that we were in, so we're going to ignore it.
Real with it. They have to create a dish using whatever they find at the dog sled camp. And among things to be found at the dog sled camp, we had ingredients such as halibut, arugula, red currant jam, Canadian bacon, sockeye salmon, bok choy. So I have to – that's a pretty good dog camp to be at if I have to be at a dog camp. I think they're eating
now the question
pretty well.
Is, I kind of feel like the producers brought in a lot of course
food
ahead
of time. Of course they did. But I would have preferred it.
Cheez-Its.
Yeah, like I actually wish it was like just canned beans and – you know?
Yes. Like the challenge where the chefs had to make a dish on the Staten Island Ferry with like
that
literal pre-made nacho cheese.
Sauvage. That one was so funny.
Yeah, that would have been good. The producers really cooked this one.
Yeah. I don't know. The halibut. Oh my God. All right. Let's just start with Josh because this man is really, he's grinding my gears now. This guy makes breakfast again.
For like the 15th time this season.
Makes bacon, albeit
Canadian
bacon.
Do we count Canadian bacon?
Yes,
bacon?
We count Canadian
okay.
bacon.
Okay, I was going to say. I put it in the counter.
If it was somebody else, I might make an exception, but for him, I will not.
I agree.
And
this fucking dish.
Padma is like, I'm going to guess you made this, Josh. and then we get it from Tom on the scrambled eggs. He makes scrambled eggs, cornmeal cake with Canadian bacon and sockeye salmon. And Tom goes, they're just scrambled? Really? Okay. And that was so satisfying to me.
So satisfying.
Was
and
Emerald
they even
well too?
Scrambled?
I can't remember if Emerald made it to base camp.
No, Emerald was not there. It was just Padma and Tom and like 6 dog sled racers.
Okay. They did like the corn cake.
They did like the corn cake, but the eggs weren't even well scrambled. Like if you're going to do scrambled eggs, they better be Gordon Ramsay style, like super technical with a million like liters of heavy cream and butter. Yeah. Oh my God, did he? And Brooke also had a talking head of like, Josh makes breakfast, which is clearly all he's capable of doing.
Yeah, she kind of like great. Shots fired.
It's about goddamn time.
I know. But I need these conversations to happen at judges' table too.
Yes. Yes.
It's like happening in these moments, like side, you know, like sitting at the table. No, like mm-hmm. this needs to be a central point of feedback that we give this man at this point.
Yes. We need to remember that this man did breakfast for the sushi challenge.
Oh, yeah.
I can forgive it at dog sled base camp. Yeah. I cannot forgive it.
You had to save the breakfast card for dog sled base camp.
You got to save the breakfast card for like the time when you have no ingredients. You yeah. cannot use the breakfast card when you have a sushi master and the highest quality fish available to you.
Okay, very true. That is a good point.
Was like straight to jail for me.
Yep. Yup.
Yup. Anyway, I digress. So Josh makes breakfast. Sheldon makes a pan-roasted halibut with chicken broth, bok choy, and tomato. We hear the feedback that the halibut was perfectly cooked, but the broth was a little salty.
A little foreshadowing, perhaps?
Perhaps. And then Brooke, with the winning dish, made halibut with an arugula salad and red currant vinaigrette with walnuts. They thought it was a delicious combination of flavors. And the crouton was the real winner.
Crouton Yay. Crunch. Yay.
Go, Brooke.
Go, Brooke.
Love to see our girly winning.
Soaring to new heights.
Seriously. So then we have like a really funny interlude, which is Padma is like, I'm traveling back with you.
Yeah, where does Tom go, by the way?
Where does Tom go? We'll never know. I think he waited for the next helicopter.
He's in the Iditarod. He can't come back till he competes.
I bet he was loving it.
Yeah.
But so they land from the helicopter, and then Padma like inexplicably like drives them. And they're yeah. all squished in the back seat because the cameraman needs to be in the front
Sheldon's
seat.
Sheldon's like, I've never seen Padma drive. And I'm like, wait, I haven't either. Are you going to be okay?
We've never seen Padma spend like quality time with the chefs outside of a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was kind of cute. I liked it.
It was cute. It was cute. And they're all like smushed in the back.
Yeah. The smush in the back was really funny.
Yeah. I love that.
I loved it.
They get back to the house and there's some intruders.
Oh, uninvited guests.
Emeril and Roy Chili, Mr. Gourmet Food Truck.
The man who definitely invented an art form, and then that art form was bastardized by Austin, Texas.
Yeah, the snake ate its tail.
Mm-hmm.
So they're cooking. They're doing thanglings.
Emeril and Roy Choi are preparing a meal in the chef's home kitchen. And, yeah.
Before they like laid out what this challenge was, I was kind of wondering at the direction of the conversation that they were having, because Roy Choi was sort of saying, you know, he's like, every time I cook my rice and I'm waiting for it to be like kind of an explanation, a very technical yes. explanation. And he sort of just says like, I think about my ancestors and this and that, and just like gives a very beautiful but kind of like intense response to how he makes rice. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then Emeril's over there like making cornbread. And I'm like, okay, what is this menu? I'm thinking it's going to be one of those, you know, you're on one of their teams, or you have to eat now yeah. make the meal you're eating. So I was like trying to like track the clues, but no. They're just warming them up, because the elimination challenge, as we'll learn while they're tableside enjoying this food from Emeril and Roy Choi, is that they have to create a dish based on the moment they realized they were destined to become a chef.
I really did love Roy Choi talking about how like Emeril essentially like saved his life.
I love that. That was really cool. That's like the cool thing about Top Chef generally yes. is that it's so multi-generational at this point yes. where chefs are coming on and inspiring the next generation of chefs who are coming on and inspiring. And, you know, obviously that doesn't apply for Emeril and Roy Choi in this case, but we see that now in later seasons of Top Chef. And yeah, that was yeah. like really beautiful.
Yeah. And we also got a nice moment. Actually, it was either, yeah, it was this episode where Sheldon, like Tom is talking about when he became a chef, and he was like, you know, I was a dishwasher. And Sheldon's like, I was also a dishwasher. Like, that's such – it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And So emotional. I really like that moment. But first off, we find out that Brooke and Roy Choi are friends.
Friends. And then, she's a bit of a prodigy myself.
Yeah, that was I want to get to that moment. So yes, they're given the prompt, make a dish that is inspired by the moment you wanted to be. You knew you wanted to be a chef.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, Josh's wife is in active labor. And he wakes up at like 2 a.m. to watch her give birth on FaceTime, which was crazy.
Yeah. That was a really sad moment. And she called him and was just like, I wish you were here.
Yeah. That actually was heartbreaking. She could have been in so much pain. And she was like, why aren't you here?
Ugh.
I kind of wanted to do my judgy table on like missing childbirth, but I feel like I'm you kind of in know, no though. Place to judge.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that was tough.
I'm sure that was a family decision, and
yes,
it just had to be hard and suck in the moment. And but like he was up all night. Good for him. He was sitting there waiting for that little Skype.
Yeah, and then he met his daughter. Yeah, in the morning. That was really sweet. But so the three of them are just like sitting there thinking, what do they want to make? Sheldon really taps into his Hawaiian roots. Josh, surprisingly, does not tap into his Southern roots.
Yeah, shockingly.
I was like relieved, honestly. If he had, I would have been like,
I was relieved too, but I actually, let's see.
This would have been the moment to pull that out in Alaska.
Yeah, but it's like the breakfast thing. It's like you've sort of cashed in on that too much. You've made too many withdrawals. Now you can't.
Exactly.
Now you can't withdraw that anymore.
Exactly.
His inspiration was just reading, what, Bon Appetit or some magazine.
Food and Wine magazine.
Yeah, Food and Wine
I wonder
magazine.
If it was actually Food and Wine magazine. Or
yeah, I'm going to call bullshit on that. Yeah. I'm going to call bullshit on that. And he saw an article about Torshan. And then we had Brooke, who found inspiration from a dish that her mother used to make. And all of this, the chefs have to prepare this meal for the governor of Alaska and the first lady.
Mm-hmm. And Wolfgang Puck, our favorite.
And Wolfgang Puck, who like somehow also got an invite from halfway across the world. okay, remind me. When I heard the governor thing, I was like, I cannot. Could you imagine if this happened during Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin. I was thinking the same thing.
That actually would have been really good TV, I think. I think I would have preferred Sarah Palin.
I am so glad that you brought that up because I think forever, for our entire generation, our only association of the governor of Alaska will be Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Who is now like an Instagram celebrity who like hawks flat tummy tea. You know,
yes.
Like she is a disgusting disgrace for the – I can't even get
is
into
she,
it.
She was governor before these people.
Yes. So okay. She was John McCain's running mate in 2008. And I think at that point she was actively the governor of Alaska. And she – and this is 2012. So this is the governor after Sarah Palin. But oh my God, I was also like, is it going to be Sarah Palin?
But I say that now, but I don't know anything. I know that would be crazy. Opens the door like, surprise, I'm back.
Yeah. Let's actually not look up where this governor like is today because I'm scared of what we might find.
Ignorance is bliss. So all right. Let's talk about the food here. Yeah. Let's start with Brooke. Brooke does a braised chicken grilled quail with vegetables. That was not a very good description, but it was a very homey dish. Do you have any color to add there that might be helpful?
The only color to add is that one of the vegetables she made was mushrooms, which – so this okay, I'm going to actually hold this comment for a second. But she made mushrooms, added to the counter.
Okay, got it. Excellent. It looked very tasty. It was – the judges loved it. The table loved it. It tasted homey. I really liked how Roy Choi described it. Let's talk about the Roy Choi and Brooke dynamic here too. He said, quote, it looks really simple until you break it apart and find different temperatures and textures. And that's really – I really liked that read because I think we don't talk a lot about different temperature as a interesting part of enjoying a dish or a meal. But – I don't know. I just thought that was really astute and crisp observation of something that is really enjoyable about a great plate of food.
Yeah. I also, like, So the moment that I want to meditate on for a second is when he's like, he puts his fork and knife down and he looks everyone on the table. He goes, guys, like, Brooke is a prodigy in Los Angeles. Like, he sort of lobbied for her in a way like, you know, any good friend would. But it was just this moment of like him telling everyone what's what and being like, no, she's the real deal. She's not just someone you cast on a show. Like, she is the genuine article.
Yeah.
And he took a moment to really go to bat for his friend, which I appreciated.
That was cute.
And I think it was also like, it definitely swayed like the governor and his wife, who like have no context for any of this.
Yeah, they're like, she's the real deal? Like, oh my God. She's the realist? Yeah.
First things first.
I would like to, That was nice. And I'm sure that the chefs or the judges didn't, you know, that didn't sway them.
Sway them at all. But
that's fun. It's fun to see a familiar face. So, yeah, no, I don't. She kind of was like, kind of had it in a really good spot, kicking off the dinner. Yeah. Sheldon comes out. We see him. He made one really smart decision, which was like he waited to cook the fish. But he made one really bad decision in that the broth just cooked down and down and down until it was super salty. Mm-hmm. And so he's tasting it as he's plating it and realizing like, oh shit. Wolfgang got his face right up in this dish and was just like sniffing and slurping. That actually was the first time I noticed Wolfgang was there. I missed when they introduced him, I guess. So I just look over and I just see like
Wolfgang.
Wolfgang, just Wolfgang. Like a dog in a bowl. But he cooked the fish and prawn perfectly, which was great. I love – it's always a good sign when they cook the protein well.
Spot prawn, an ingredient we thought would be way more prominent in this season than it ended up being.
Where did we land? I mean, we had a lot in the early
– this is literally the only instance of spot prawns since the episode when they all made spot prawns.
Okay, okay. God, what are we at with bacon at this point?
Oh, we'll get to it.
Okay, okay, good. What are your thoughts on Sheldon's dish? I'm sorry, we didn't even say what he did. Do you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. So Sheldon made a roasted fish with a dashi and spot prawns. And in general, the feedback was like perfectly cooked, but the broth was too salty. And so it was sort of – it's one of those things that I bet if this had been earlier on in the season, it would have gone completely unnoticed. Yeah. But because, you know, it's final three, they're only tasting three dishes tonight – they really could focus on it.
And his was inspired by a local Hawaiian chef.
Yes, like a Hawaiian chef who I think was a real trailblazer. Yeah. Sam Choi, I think his name was.
Yes.
So, okay, so that's Sheldon. Then third out, we have Josh. So Josh made foie gras three ways, which brings me to my point that we got one of everything in the counter in this episode.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Like, we got a full deal. So, would you like to know what the counters are, where they are sitting in episode 15?
Yes.
So, we got one bacon, we got one spot prawn, we got one food and ways, and we got one mushroom, which means we have bacon. How many times do you think bacon has appeared?
17.
21.
Oh, my God.
And, like, most of those have to be Josh. Then we have spot prawns four times, three of which were in episode two and one of which was in this episode. Food and ways, 7. Mushrooms, 14.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
The bacon and the 7 ways – or the N ways, that's the real standouts to me because that's, like – even mushrooms, okay. Yeah, it's, like, a popular ingredient.
I also think I may have missed a mushroom here and there.
That's okay. The real story here is bacon.
Bacon. Get it out of here.
Get it out of here, dude.
I'm so glad.
You should have like a limit on something. It should be like Top Chef Lent. Like you have to give up one thing but when you come on Top Chef that you
love to. That would be fun. Top Chef should hire us to help make their challenges.
That is perfect, yeah.
Particularly.
So we can push our religious agenda.
Yes, but particularly the product placement challenges. I think I could be really valuable for.
I think we could be too. We love to buy things. So,
what's the funniest sponsor for a Top Chef? Tell me a sponsor. I will invent a challenge right now.
Charmin.
Oh, easy, dude. You have to create a fire with Charmin toilet paper and cook over the fire.
That's not like the easy answer.
No, I'm saying that's not an easy challenge, but it's like an easy, like, dude, I can do Charmin in my sleep.
The level of confidence in that assertion, like, easy, just torch it and then cook over it. I don't think, no, I'm going to disqualify that as an option. What's your other, I need another idea. I need another idea.
Fine, another idea. You have to make something that inspires diarrhea. And then the one that the Charmin cleans the most wins.
Okay, that's a better one. Thank you. That one maybe like breaks the rules so that it like takes more than 24 hours, but
Okay, fine. Wait. Let me think of a third Charmin idea. A third Charmin idea. No cutting boards. You have to cut on Charmin to show how strong it is.
Okay, that's good.
Thank you.
That's
hire
good.
Me.
That'd be disgusting, but that's a good idea.
Thank you. Oh,
thank
I'm a
you.
Okay,
wait, try
so
me.
So let's talk about Josh's.
I want to do an advertiser challenge.
Oh, okay. I'll give you one. How about I'm looking around my apartment for a funny sponsor. Timberland boots.
Oh. Okay. My mind obviously goes to the challenge where like the judges have to forage for something wearing Timberland boots.
Ooh.
Like mushroom foraging. That seems like an interesting one. Or alternatively, the judges have to, or the chefs have to do like a, what do you call it? When they, you know, when you like bake a cake and it has to look like the thing, they have to like design a pair of Timberland boots out of food.
See, I was also thinking that maybe it could be like a construction site and all the construction workers are wearing Timberland boots and like you have to make lunch for the construction workers.
Oh, yeah. Or Timberland.
Using
is the guest
a yeah. 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 Timbaland actually is the judge of the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at
okay,
us.
Okay, cool. Look at
there
us.
There you go. That's our team.
Oh my God. This would be really fun. Okay. I have a real one. Tums.
Ooh.
Make the most acidic dish you can think of and then lie down afterward.
I think you have to make your own Tum flavor.
Huh.
You have to make a dish to inspire a new flavor of Tums.
It's like a really complex dish.
It's like shrimp scampi.
Shrimp scampi flavored Tums.
Or like beef Wellington. It has to be a dish that requires you to have Tums.
Yeah, like mole.
So gross. Disgusting. It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when they have like the snozzberries taste like snozzberries type stuff.
Yes. Oh my God.
Okay, amazing.
Wow. Right. Okay, thank so we've proved that we're talented beyond just talking about things. We're also creative geniuses.
We are. We can make something out of nothing.
Nothing. I'm just still, my vendetta is still out for the Finnish dish detergent. Like
that one was
flambe
so
challenge. That was the worst. That was the worst one ever.
Aluminum.
Okay, cool.
The best. Reynolds.
The best. Reynolds wrap, A+.
Yeah.
A wrapped pineapple, A+.
They haven't done enough with hefty garbage bags either. I'd like to see a garbage bag.
Yeah, or
challenge.
Like the Glad family of products, which is a forever furnisher of Top Chef.
Yeah. Like a three-legged race in a trash bag to the kitchen or something.
Yes, that is it for sure.
Okay.
We have disrupted this meal. So we have Sheldon making his salty broth. And now we have Josh making foie gras three ways. So the first way is a torchon. Then we have it pan grilled. And then we have a profiterole of foie gras.
Yeah.
Which was super interesting.
Very interesting.
So everything on this plate was good, except for the torchon, which, as Tom said, is just physically impossible to complete in the amount of time that he was given.
Yeah. That sucked. Because everybody could tell, like, okay, he's trying to push himself, but it was just a fool's errand on the torchon.
Yeah. And I think Tom's critique is, like, there's pushing yourself and then there's knowing what's physically possible.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's sort of foolish to do something that is quite literally impossible And like, just essentially, I think his judgment was called into question here.
Yeah. There were some elements people liked. They liked the apricot. They liked the cornbread. Mm-hmm. It felt a little like one texture. There was a desire to have a bit more texture diversity, which, yeah, I don't know that I would want a dinner with foie gras three different ways. It just doesn't seem like tasty or interesting to me. So, yeah, basically the day that his daughter is born, he is eliminated.
Brutal.
Sucks.
Brooke wins. Sheldon goes to the finale. And Josh is sent home to meet his daughter. Like, I mean, here's the thing. Obviously, it's the type of thing. It's like, if I'm going to miss the birth of my child, it better be worth it. But at the same time, it's like, my daughter was just born and kind of nothing else matters. And maybe it's time to just go home.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that's an okay time.
I think it's okay.
Long way. You made it all the way to the governor's mansion.
The governor of Alaska's mansion. Honestly, like as far as you can get from Oklahoma City.
But the shitty thing is like he can't go home because he's going to Last Chance Kitchen. So he's sort of like there for a little bit longer a loser, which
but
sucks.
But I think Last Chance Kitchen is not in Alaska.
True. Where is it? LA?
It looked like in the preview for the next episode, it like is in a kitchen somewhere. Like they clearly took a break. But it begs the question, like, why did they bring the Last Chance Kitchen people to Alaska? Anyway, doesn't matter.
Weird.
So yeah. So Josh heads off to Last Chance Kitchen and Sheldon and Brooke are off to the finale, where they will face off with the winner of Last Chance Kitchen. And that finale will be in Los Angeles, Brooke's home turf.
Uh-oh.
Home field advantage. She's coming.
And it's
for
a sporty
you.
One. Seriously. Okay. Nancy. Josh's foie gras three ways. Would you eat that?
No, I don't like foie gras.
I don't either. I don't want to eat it.
It has nothing to do with whether it's cooked or not. I'm just not interested.
Yeah. Not my thigh.
But where is Josh now, you might ask?
Josh
has gone on to become the executive chef at the Ellison Hotel in Oklahoma City, a restaurant called Milo. And he remains dedicated to bringing contemporary food to Oklahoma. He does not want to leave. He sees – like he doesn't feel like he needs to be in a major metropolis to do the work that he loves. So he's happy. His daughter is 10 years old. And he's just killing it in Oklahoma.
That's awesome.
Actually, his daughter's 13. Excuse me. Bad math.
Oh, my God.
Oof. Time flies.
Time playing.
Okay.
Wow, that's awesome. Good for Josh.
Judgy table.
Mine's kind of like another random one.
Okay, let's let it ride. I might not have one at all unless you inspire me. So high stakes. Okay. Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Chandelier earrings, which Gail was rocking this episode. If you're not familiar with what chandelier earrings are, they were a style of earring that was really popular. I would say they're actually like tapering off by this time. Like I think that they were more popular in like the late 2000s, but they're basically just, they look like little dangly, they're super dangly, super ornate earrings. And they just like had women in a chokehold for 10 years and you wore them to every prom and homecoming and like fancy event. And they're just gaudy and horrible looking. I obviously have like a very specific kind of aesthetic taste with jewelry now, but those are, they don't look good on anybody. They're not look good looking on their own. They're the worst type of earring ever. That's my judgy table.
Thank you. Honestly, I'm really happy that you took your judgy table in that direction, because it just was a nice release after what was a serious episode.
It's hard to have a judgy. I think what I'm finding is the judgy tables are hard when we get down to 3-4 people. You know?
That is true. Okay, if I were to do an unrelated to food judgy table, I don't really have that much like to go on here. This is really off the cuff because I'm a student of improv. Nancy, your judgy table starts now. Dog sledding of absolutely no interest to me. I am very afraid of dogs to begin with.
Oh, right.
But it's just like we have moved on from this form of transportation for good reason. There was that one film that they made us watch in elementary school. What was that like Disney movie about the Iditarod?
Oh, do you know what I'm talking about? It was based on a true story.
Yeah, but it was also like a coming of age tale. And I remember that we had to watch it in like my fourth grade class. And it was like, you know, every Friday we'd watch it. We watched it in like 15 minute increments. And I just wanted that unit to be over. So these are my thoughts on dog sledding.
I think you're thinking of Balto, the movie Balto.
You could literally tell me anything. I don't remember the name.
Yeah. And there's also, it's funny, I've talked about this before. There's a statue of Balto in Central Park.
There is?
Yeah, I don't know why, but I know this because it came up at dinner like a few months ago.
Balto statue?
I'm not sure. Balto statue in Central Park?
It is in Central Park. I didn't know that. If you want to talk about fun things in Central Park, let me find the name of it. But there is a water fountain near the tennis courts in Central Park, which I frequently walk past because, not to brag, but I love playing tennis in Central Park. If anyone listens in New York, I'm always down to play. And this water fountain was like, I need to pull it up and get the exact name. But it has been donated to Central Park by a very funny sounding organization. Let me see if this will be – this photo will yield the results I'm looking for. No. Could it be here? No, it's like the pizza. It's like the Spaghetti Society of New York City donated this Central Park water fountain
monster, or whatever.
It's not the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, but it is like the Pasta Society of New York City.
Oh, actual spaghetti. Okay.
Like actually.
Oh, here it is. Spaghetti.
Yep, here it is. Okay, let's see. Hold up, I took a video of it. Literally, it's called the 72nd Street Marathon and Pasta Society.
Oh, my God.
Donated this water fountain to Central Park. It is a non-functioning water fountain. Anyway, thanks for sticking with me, listeners, through that. So next week, we're in the finale. It's a two-parter. Look out for our coverage because it's going to be great. We have the epic return of Kristen Kish to look forward to. Spoiler alert. Triumphant as she is. And other than that, it's just a gosh darn family fun good time.
Yep.
So stick around for next week's episode of Compliments to the Chef.
Goodbye.
Bye.